BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. The world's most famous doll makes a rather shy new friend. 7-year-old Alora.
The skirt, it feels different than other Barbies. Feel what the texture is. The eyes are different as well. And it has glasses on. Normally, they don't have these glasses. But it is different because they have a cane.
So when you see a toy like Barbie that's got a cane and got glasses and it's got things that you might have to use, how does that make you feel about using them when you're bigger?
Happy.
Later, we'll be examining the significance of disabled youngsters recognising themselves in the toys they play with. But first, more news on cuts at the RNIB. When we talked to Chief Executive Matt Stringer 3 weeks ago about where savings amounting to around £10 million could be made and what the implications would be both for staff and the blind people who use those services, he told us...
We're going to spend the next 6 months till the end of this calendar year to really work out what that sort of shape of the RNIB is going to look like going forwards, and then with a view to sort of implementing early in the new year of 2025. So, you know, that's the programme. And within that, we will, you know, work out where the areas of cost saving look like. And, you know, at the appropriate time, we can talk to staff about any redundancies. But we haven't done that yet. It will be premature to talk to you about it because we just don't have the detail. And we will get to that as we work through that 6 month timetable I've just said.
But documents that we've seen suggest that, although not strictly part of the 10-year structure plan, one section of the RNIB, TFL, or Technology for Life, is already facing being disbanded, absorbed into the sight loss advice team, inevitably resulting in some redundancies. TFL was set up in 2018 to provide blind and partially sighted people with specialist advice and help with the very fast-moving developments in technology, which can be of enormous benefit to blind people, but which can also prove very challenging to master. As news of these plans has spread, it's resulted in many angry responses on social media, partly because people doubt whether the proposed changes will provide customers with as dedicated and well-informed a service as they receive at the moment, and partly because a high proportion of those working for Technology for Life as coordinators and line managers are themselves visually impaired, and redundancies among them seem unavoidable. Here are just a few examples of the comments made online that we've had permission to use.
I'm not sure what the RNIB do anymore. Down the years, they've got rid of most of their services. Education, residential, the Braille library, and now wanting to get rid of the Technology for Life team. How does that mean services won't be lost? Major charities are being run like big businesses and headed by business CEOs on enormous salaries.
Once again, not taking into consideration the needs of service users. How can they even contemplate disbanding the Technology for Life team? This service is one of the most popular the RNIB have. There have been waiting lists for as long as I can remember. In this day and age, technology has never been more essential and beneficial to blind and partially sighted people. And many people need assistance in using it. Where will they get that now?
This is so sad and worrying for many of my friends who work within these teams. I don't understand the rationale for this when there's such a need for this service. And yes, I do understand the difficulties that all charities are going through at the moment.
I've been looking for work for years. Stuff like this makes me feel hopeless. If the people meant to advocate for us can't employ us, who will? What example does this set for larger mainstream organisations?
Apparently, Technology for Life has been under review for the past 18 months, but the teams weren't aware of this. Well, some of you have been urging us to invite the RNIB's chief executive back to the programme to explain these plans. We have issued that invitation, but we've been told that they're unable to provide a spokesperson, as all information relating to any ongoing consultations is confidential. We have this statement from the RNIB instead.
All charities are facing challenges with the impact of inflation, which is leading to an increase in costs. While RNIB's income is stable, we've been using our reserves to support a planned deficit for this financial year. But this isn't a long-term solution. We plan to spend the next 6 months working on a new structure and ways of working to ensure RNIB is fit for the future. Alongside this transformation planning, there are some ongoing changes affecting some teams within RNIB, which sits outside of the transformation programme. This work has been ongoing for the past year and is now reaching the final stages. We're not able to share details about these changes until the work is fully complete. We recognise the concern these changes may mean for our staff and customers, and we will be supporting them through this time of change. We want to build an RNIB for the future, and to continue to invest in the things that matter most to blind and partially sighted people.
Well, we will continue to press for answers to your questions and to explore what alternatives there might be for people struggling with their technology.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Now, lots of excitement last week as the first blind Barbie doll made a glitzy and well-orchestrated tour of TV and radio studios in the warm embrace of model, influencer and broadcaster Lucy Edwards.
I'm good. How the devil are you?
This is Barbie. She's currently waving. That's the audio description. She's holding a long white cane and it has a marshmallow tip, very much like my own. I don't know about yours, Pete.
No, mine's an old-fashioned
one. Well, there we go. But actually, I've been told that it's got a red tip, which is very American of her, because the American Foundation for the Blind consulted on that. But that's lovely. We just love diversity in the canes that she's holding. But it actually is detachable. She's wearing a little rah-rah skirt, which is gorgeous, and it's really easy to kind of get on and off. That's really important to be
easily. It just slides off, does it?
Just slides off, yeah. Yep. And I think also there's a really cool colour contrast that if you're visually impaired, you can actually see the Velcro also at the back of her top. I will just ASMR.
There we go.
It's just really gorgeous tactile clothing. Actually, where are your glasses, Barbie? I don't know whether I've chucked them on the floor, but she's got detachable glasses. And she's also amazing because her eye gaze is slightly upward to reflect all different eyesight conditions. Sometimes, you know, our eyes do that. I know my right eye veers a bit and I love that about the way I look. So, yeah, she's just beautiful, really.
What is the significance of this doll to you personally? Just explain why this is important to you.
I never had role models growing up as a young blind person who looked like me. The women role models in my life were few and far between with visual impairments, and I used to Google the word blindness and nothing would come up. And the most popular doll in the world now looks like me, and I'm like, well, I can be fashionable like Barbie, and now someone who has a vision impairment can be Barbie. Like, what? Like, this is 2024 and it should have happened sooner, but it's so cool that it's happening now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Mattel have been criticised in the past for not producing dolls which represent disabled children. Is this just a response to that criticism, do you think? And does it work?
I think it really works. You don't have to play with blind Barbie if you're blind. Oh, yeah, you can have all sorts of disabilities or not have one at all. I think it's the culture that she has around her. And I think as a young girl, just being exposed to a long white cane that's detachable, like this can go on to any Barbie and it is an accessory now. And I think I hated my long white cane. I didn't want to get it out. I hated just, you know, visibly being blind. And I think blind Barbie holding a cane is just super cool. I think when people see representations of blindness, it makes them more comfy, even if you aren't blind, to be exposed to it, because we're not told in our workplaces or in our education systems about blindness, are we?
I'm interested in the philosophy behind this, you know, the idea that children want to see themselves in the toys that they play with. And because, you see, I mean, I don't remember feeling like that, but I did play with dolls. Quite a lot of boys did and do. And I don't remember caring whether she was blind or not.
I guess that's a personal preference, maybe, because we differ. People who are looking at the press and they see blind Barbie, they're like, wow, there's kids out there that are blind. You know, there's some people that have never... I mean, they've probably heard of blindness, but they don't know how independent we can be. We're being counted by being a Barbie, I think.
Let me bring in Debbie on this. Debbie Miller, Director of Customer Advice and Support at the RNIB. Do we know how much this is an issue? Because I suppose what I'm thinking is, aren't toys about fantasy mainly? And fantasy is about being someone else, not necessarily being yourself.
Toys do a number of things. Importantly, they help children learn through play. And I think what Blind Barbie does in representing a blind or partially sighted person is give visually impaired children an opportunity to interact and play with a toy that represents them. Also, their sighted friends, you can play together and both be represented by Barbie dolls. Barbie has gone leaps and bounds in the last few years, is super inclusive now.
Mattel consulted with the American Foundation for the Blind quite extensively on how she should look. And I know those focus groups had so many different people of all different ages with all different spectrums of eyesight conditions. So this is wanted and it's here to stay. It's just about adding to the line as well. Like, we need to see a guide dog, I think. And we need to see a cane with, like, glitter, like my one here. Maybe Barbie can have, like, different wraps to her cane and match her handbags. Like, I think it's about exploring the different ways that people see the cane now and how we expand it. I know there's Down syndrome Barbie.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
There's wheelchair Barbie.
Yeah.
I hope lots of other toy manufacturers take and follow Mattel's approach. As a parent with sight loss, it can be really difficult for me to find toys and games to play with my three children that work for them and work for me. So all organisations to consider how someone might interact with a product with sight loss, I think, is brilliant. And hopefully Mattel can set that precedent.
Just one final thing. We haven't talked about Ken, have we? We haven't. Is there a Ken, Lucy?
You know what? I want to be able to say that there's a Ken, but I mean, hot off the press, you'll be the first one to know, Pete, I'm sure. But I'm having quite extensive conversations. I know on the shoot day a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about all these iterations of like different things we want to see Blind Barbie holding. And there's no reason that we can't talk about more. And I think, I mean, watch this space, really.
Right. Lucy Edwards, Debbie Miller, thank you very much.
Thanks,
for coming
Pete.
In.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Well, that was all good fun, but what real significance does it have and how and where can it be developed? I've been talking to Rebecca Atkinson, who almost 10 years ago started the campaign Toy Like Me.
Toy Like Me was started when I had just got my first guide dog, actually, and I had two young kids. They were about 5 and 6 at the time. Our house was awash with Lego and Playmobil and Barbies and all sorts. And I was tidying up their toys one day and I realised actually there's no representation of disability here in what is such a huge sort of cultural influencer on their lives. And it was really that made me think, oh, hang on a minute, where is the positive representation? So I went looking for it and all I found was grey wheelchair figures and grandparent figures in hospital sets. And so it was then that we started to look at what you could do with the aesthetics of disability and what happened when you collided disability with the fantasy of the toy box. So we started making over Barbie dolls with pink hearing aids, giving Barbie dolls vitiligo, taking high-res images, and we put them online and they went viral. And then there was a big outpouring on Facebook about those images. Where can I buy these? Where can I get these? And I believe that which made the toy industry press pick up on this, and that bevel planted the seed into the minds of people like Mattel and Barbie.
That's what struck me about it, was that you wanted to have fun with the idea rather than kind of make it a preachy thing. Was that a very conscious idea on your part?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really interested in the history of representation of disabled people. And I think in the past, what we found is before the internet came about, you very, very rarely saw any disabled people anywhere in the media. They were not in magazines. They were not on TV. But the only place you ever saw visually impaired people was obviously perhaps on In Touch. If you've been doing it for 50 years, you could hear them. But in terms of actual representation in consumer culture, they were not there. And when we did see disabled people and blind people, it was through the charity narrative. So it was on posters that were designed for charities to get money. So we were getting a very one-sided perception of what disability is all about. So I was really interested in what happens when you throw pink and glitter and colour that you find in the toy industry. What happens when you collide that with disability? What can that leap forwards and say something new about life with a disability?
How conscious do you think children really are about this? I'm talking about at this stage, the blind children. I wasn't really conscious of this and didn't bother me. I don't think, unless I've completely forgotten it.
So children don't necessarily know what they want if they haven't experienced it. But what I see through my work at Toy Like Me, which is now an arts and play organisation, is we take disabled toys and we hold events with disabled children and their families. And the response that I see in the child when they see that, I call it the ping of recognition. Their eyes will light up and they get a moment of, wow, that's me.
So if one of the Famous Five had been blind, that would have really cheered me up, would it?
I don't know, Peter. Everyone's individual, aren't they? And it depends what your own relationship is with your disability. For some people, positive representation is very affirming because your self-esteem is formed around how the world around you responds to you. So if everybody is saying, oh, bless, oh, dear, oh, then that child internalises that. And what you tend to see down the line is young people and adults with disability who are fighting against a sense of shame or low self-esteem internally, and that has been built not by themselves but by the way that they interact with the world around them. So if you have consumer culture, which is available to everyone everywhere, if consumer culture is actually including you and saying you're part of the wider consumer culture, then there is some power in that in terms of normalising your experience.
An important part of your argument, I think, is that these toys aren't just aimed at blind children or children with other disabilities, but directed at all children. Why? And what sure. would attract a child without a disability, yeah. say, to Barbie yeah. with a white cane?
As part of my work over the last 10 years in this field, I've done work with Dr. Sian Jones, who's an academic at Queen Margaret in Edinburgh. She has found that by playing with disabled toys for just 3 minutes, non-disabled children's friendship intention towards their disabled peers improves. So essentially, by exposing a non-disabled child to a Barbie with a white cane for just 3 minutes, when they go on to meet a real child with a white cane, their friendship intentions and those attitudinal barriers will be removed. So this is not really just about disabled people wanting to be represented in the toy box. Maybe some don't, maybe some do. It's about a wider narrative of how do you remove attitudinal barriers towards disabled people by normalising it in the early years sector, so that when those early years children grow up, they've seen something other than negative charity representations of disability. They've seen it in a more positive and more well-rounded approach.
Rebecca Atkinson. And that's it for today. As always, we'd like to hear your comments and questions relating to what you've heard in the programme or about anything else for that matter. And we'd particularly like to hear about where and how you currently get training with your technology. What's worked and what hasn't. You can email in touch at bbc.co.uk. You can leave us a voicemail on 0161 836 1338 or go to our website bbc.co.uk/in touch. From me, Peter White, and producer Beth Hemmings. Goodbye.